This is Clay from Skilled Gentlemen Podcast. You're listening to Handgun World Podcast with Bob Main.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, this week I've got some voicemails, and I'm going to play a couple of them for you, maybe cover an email or two, but mostly I got a couple of good voicemails, and then I got a recap from an IDPA match that I shot recently. And I think you're going to like to hear some of what I talked about, because it has to do with my third-gen G19 that I had some new grip work done. I got a chance to test it out. I got a chance to shoot a match with it and so forth, and so that worked out pretty well. And I think you're going to like to hear the recap on it. So, first of all, what I want to do is, you know, you guys have heard me talk a lot about the 1,000-round trigger job. That I feel that it's important that any gun that you're going to carry for self-defense, that you give it a 1,000-round trigger job. I've done an entire podcast episode on the 1,000-round trigger job, and I've mentioned it numerous times. Well, recently one of my listeners and also one of my fellow podcasters had a little bit of feedback on his 1,000-round triggered job, so let's listen to it.
Hi, Bob. This is Rob Morse, and I have a tip on a 1,000-round trigger job. Just completed that on my Glock, and I really didn't like the way it felt after the 1,000 rounds until I cleaned it. All it was involved is a little spray, a toothbrush, a little air, a little lube, and all of a sudden, the 1,000-round trigger job was complete. Once I got the wear material and the dirt out of there, it felt like a whole new gun. Thanks for the tip on the 1,000-round trigger job. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Rob. Isn't it amazing how that happens? You know, you clean a gun and it's better. I've always said the reason you give a gun a 1,000-round trigger job, any gun, rifle, pistol, shotgun. You know, when a gun is brand new, it hasn't gotten broken in yet. And I know some people say, well, you know, some guns don't need breaking in. I don't believe that. I believe that every gun needs to be broken in, and the shooter needs to be broken in. When you wear the parts in and they get broken in, they get smoother. Triggers get smoother. The gun's action gets smoother. They seem to get a little bit more reliable the more you shoot them, you know. Also, the shooter. The most important thing is the 1,000-round trigger job is for the shooter. I'll make you a promise. Whatever gun you pick up, you will be better after 1,000 rounds than you were on the first round of shooting that gun. I promise you'll be better. And even if you don't have any training, even if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to have some success. And I hope that whenever you have some success in that first 1,000 rounds, that you figure out what it was you did and keep repeating that. And I'll bet that there's a pretty good chance that you are going to be a better shooter. And especially, here's what you do. When you get a new gun, run a couple boxes of ammo through it, clean it, like Rob just mentioned, and then go take a class. It's a good idea to go ahead and purchase 1,000 rounds of ammo when you buy a new gun. Now, if it's a 9mm and you already have a 9mm and you've already got a couple 1,000 rounds, fine. Dedicate 1,000 rounds to your new purchase. But shoot a couple of hundred, make sure your gun is functioning, and go take a class. Let's say you take a 300-round class. Now you've shot the gun 500 rounds. I'll bet if you shoot a gun 200 rounds, then take a 300-round class, you'll be better, a little bit better, with that new gun than you were when you shot the first magazine of ammo. If it's a revolver, same thing. You'll be better after 500 rounds than you were in the first two cylinders of shooting. Then shoot another couple hundred rounds to practice what you learned in the class. Then go take another 300 or 400-round class. Now you'll be up to 1,000 rounds and maybe even a little more. And you will be a better shooter. And your gun will be broken in. The parts will be broken in. You know, they'll be a little bit smoother because they'll wear together. And well, they'll actually, especially trigger parts, they'll rub together and they'll get a little smoother. Some of the burrs will come out of the trigger parts and all that. And as Rob Morse just said, clean it. Yeah, it does get better. If Rob went 1,000 rounds and didn't clean his Glock, yeah, it's not going to feel all that great. The one good thing about Glock pistols and M&Ps and XDs and Rugers, you know, you can run those guns 1,000 rounds without cleaning them, and they're still going to perform. But yeah, they're probably going to feel smoother after you give it that good cleaning. And if you don't know who Rob Morse is, listen to Self Defense Gun Stories, the podcast called Self Defense Gun Stories. He's also on the Polite Society podcast with Paul Lathrop and the whole gang over there. So, Rob, thank you very much. Rob took our Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced class last November, and I've interviewed Rob. I've interviewed him. I was on the Polite Society podcast. He and John Richardson interviewed me, and it was great to finally get a chance to meet Rob in person in November. So, Rob, thanks very much for that excellent feedback. Now, I got a caller that I want you to listen to from El Paso. So, let's get right into that.
Oh, hey, Bob. This is Q from El Paso. Hey, just wanted to offer you some episode feedback and then a show suggestion. First off, I want to start off with some thanks for putting together and continuing to host the Handgun World show. That's going on about 6.5-7 years now, even despite the individual circumstances and the family circumstances that you're dealing with. Thanks for putting forward with this labor of love. Okay, hey, some feedback on episode 370, which was your highlight reel or your Gabe Suarez interview repost. And it's a little bit surprising that something that was from so long ago, that was your original interview in 2011, still has some tenets, some truths that are still relevant today, 5 years later, and will probably still be relevant again for the next 5 years. First, definitely, that for the concealed carry holder, that ultimately they need to be ready to kill the bad guy or kill or use lethal force against another human being. I know that a lot of times say we need to stop the threat, but as individuals, as shooters, as CHL persons, we need to be ready and have made that decision that our actions are going to very much likely to cause the death of another person, and we need to be have made that decision and be spiritually at peace and morally at peace with that decision. Two, when Gabe said, hey, we need to be prepared to win the gunfight, that our goal at the end of that confrontation is to go home and go back safely to our family, and all our other actions need to drive from that. And then there are a couple of discussions where it was a discussion of skill versus equipment, that once we have decided on a good enough caliber, meaning something between 9mm and 45, and if one's got a preference for one or the other, it really doesn't matter. That once you've selected a good enough caliber, what's left is that you need to determine if you have good enough skill or good enough shot placement to deliver those reliable hits. That for all the arguments of one gun type or one gun manufacturer is better than the other, once they're good enough, it's good enough. That on the skill versus the equipment, Gabe and I think John also talked about how they need to be in balance, that the general recommendation is for that mid-size service caliber pistol, but sometimes if based on circumstances you need to go for a smaller, for a pocket pistol or a pocket gun, that when your equipment capability goes down, that significantly increases your skill. And then we went back into skills for the equipment again for a second time, describing that as you utilize suboptimal equipment in order to win that gunfight. As your equipment capability goes down, your skill requirement goes up. And Gabe described it as utilizing that 3-inch folding knife in a fight against machete, or for the CHL person to carry that pocket pistol and utilizing that suboptimal equipment short barrel, short sight radius, limited grip, small magazine capacity, and utilizing that tool to win their gunfight. And that the skill requirement in order to win that gunfight successfully goes up a heck of a lot for us. Well, those are some of the things that kind of caught my eye, caught my ear, caught my attention as I was listening to that Gabe Suarez interview. Again, Bob, thanks. Appreciate it for the hard work you've been putting into the podcast for the very long amount of time. Look forward to the next episode. I'll listen to you soon. Thanks.
Well, thank you for the nice compliment. I appreciate that. It is amazing that 5 years ago, the interview that I had with Gabe Suarez and John Payne, nearly all of that is still applicable today. You know, there's an old saying, folks, that says that the old is forever new, and there's not a lot of new things under the sun. There's not a whole lot of new ideas. There are some new things. I'm not saying that there isn't anything new, but you'll notice that sometimes a new technique is really just kind of a different way to apply something that's already been taught at one time. There are advanced skills and there are new skills. And yes, these things still do apply. 5 years isn't that much time, but it is quite interesting. And it was great for me to replay that interview because I needed to rehear that as well. He's talking about a couple of weeks ago, the episode that I put out, which was mostly a rebroadcast of an older episode where I had Gabe Suarez and John Payne from Suarez International. Let me say that his voicemail that he called into me was in two parts. That's why you heard that cool sound effect in the middle. If you want to leave a voicemail for me, the number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Yeah, and he also mentioned that, you know, if you have suboptimal equipment, you got to have better skills. A lot of people don't realize that, especially a lot of new shooters. They don't understand that. The smaller the gun, that's suboptimal, right? Shorter sight radius, sometimes a trigger press that's a little harder than normal, sometimes not real good sights on the gun. And if you haven't learned the excellent art of point shooting within close range and you've got a suboptimal piece of equipment, yeah, your skill level has to go up. So that was a very good point there, and you got to keep those in balance. And you know, 5 years ago, there was a whole lot of ammo being produced out there that was new and hitting the market. And you know, ammo technology is so good now that even if you go back 10 or 15 or even 20 years ago, there's no comparison. There's no comparison of the ammo that was made 15 or 20 years ago to the ammo that is made today. 9mm is pretty sufficient, folks. There's not a whole lot of need out there for 40 and 45, and I know that might ruffle some feathers out there. If those are your preferred calibers, fine. Stick with them, and if you can shoot a 40 or a 45 well, then more power to you. You know, stick with that and buy that ammo in bulk, stock up on it, and practice, practice, practice. But bullet technology and ammunition loading techniques and technology has gotten so good, even in just the last 5 to 10 years, that I prefer to carry a gun that has more rounds in it versus a larger caliber. If I'm going to try to decide between those two, I am going to pick the gun that has the greatest capacity every time. As long as I don't go too small on caliber. You know, something like a 22 or a 25 caliber, stuff like that, I would not recommend for a self-defense gun. Fun for going out to the range and plinking and target shooting. Hey, 22s are great for plinking and the target shooting. A lot of cheap fun. You can go out all day, shoot almost all day, and not have to take out a second mortgage to buy the ammo for that day. That's what's great about 22s, especially. For self-defense, not so much. So thanks for the call. I really appreciate him calling in. Again, one more time. You want to leave me a voicemail? 210-646-1727. So this is going to be followed up by just a quick public service announcement and something else that I'd like to say about some stuff that's going on with the Handgun World podcast and in the whole gun community out there. And then I'll get to the first recap of my IDPA match.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, during the intermission, I just want to remind you that on September 17th, 2016, in San Antonio, I am teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. It's a one day. What Ben Branham and I have done is we've called this worst case scenarios, and we've basically picked the best of the advanced class that we teach and put it into one day. I'm going to be the instructor. Ben has a scheduling commitment. As I speak this podcast, by the way, Ben is on his way to Alaska to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. I'm teaching this advanced class in San Antonio. Would love to have you there. If you want to sign up, go to handgunworld.com. Click the training classes tab, handgunworld.com. You do have to have a previous class that you've graduated from. Doesn't have to be our class, but it's got to be a proof that you've taken another training class, that you're not brand new at doing this. Okay, with that said, let's get to the first segment of my IDPA recap. All right, recording this segment from the road, as I often do in the Handgun World Mobile Studio. Early on a Saturday morning, I'm headed out to Cedar Ridge Range to shoot an IDPA match, which I haven't done. I haven't shot IDPA in a while. It's going to be fun. I like to record some of my thoughts and plans before I go to the match and then give you a recap after I leave, because I think people get a perspective, especially if you don't do a lot of competition shooting, as to what goes on at these matches and stuff and what goes through at least my mind. Maybe it'll have some value to you. I don't know. So today I am testing out my third generation G19 that I had grip work done on by Chris France at Citadel Armory. That's citadelarmory.net. Very similar to the work that he did on my fourth gen G19. You know, he removed the finger grooves, put some real nice texturing on the front strap and back strap only, not on the side panels of the grip. And as I mentioned before, you know, this, it makes enough change to the grip. And he also undercut the trigger guard. It makes enough change to the grip to where it very, very slightly changes a little bit how the gun sits in my hand, and it makes it just perfect. Now, I've never had a problem shooting stock Glocks anyway. They've never been a problem for me. You know, you get used to shooting anything, and Glocks do pretty much fit my hand. But these little improvements, which I don't understand. If you own a Glock, you know, think about doing these improvements. I don't understand why you wouldn't. Because making a few grip modifications to make it fit your hand, that's not going to hurt you at all, liability-wise, in my opinion, if you ever have to use your gun. You know, there is a controversy about modifications. Some people think modifications can hurt you, some don't. This is definitely one that can only help, in my opinion. makes the gun fit your hand better. It gives you a little bit more positive grip because of the texturing. The texturing is not real aggressive on the front strap, but the fact that there is a little bit of texturing that's non-aggressive, no finger grooves on the front, and a slightly undercut trigger guard. He probably took about an eighth of an inch off of the trigger guard, right where the middle finger rests at the back of the trigger guard. You can see pictures of it on Facebook, by the way. If you go to facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast, go to my Handgun World Podcast Facebook page, you can see it. So I'm going to be shooting that today, and I've got speed sights on that one with a green fiber optic. It's not really fiber optic. It's a painted fluorescent green front sight, and it's also a tritium night sight. So it looks like it's a fiber optic sight, and the green works real well for me. And you know, I still like those speed sights. Nobody talks about them. They're kind of unknown, you know. I mean, it's unfortunate because I think they're pretty good sights. And, they're pretty good out to 25 yards. In fact, I've shot farther than 25 yards. I've shot my G19 at about 50 to 55 yards with speed sights. And as long as you know how to use them, I make pretty good hits at that distance. And you will too. They're very intuitive. So you might want to check them out, speedsights.com. Speedsights.com. So, and by the way, they don't sponsor, and I don't have an arrangement with them anymore. I just like to talk about things that I use that work well for me, that may work well for you. I'm also a huge fan of the Trijicon HDs with a green front sight. The Trijicon HDs with a green or an orange front sight. Those are excellent too, and I've got those on a couple of pistols. Okay, so the only thing that I have not done to this third gen that I'm not going to do is I didn't change out the mag release button to an extended mag release. I don't believe in doing that. I don't like that. It sticks out too far from the frame. It's a little bit harder to press the mag release button than it is on a fourth gen. And so, you know, for those of you who are Glock shooters, that's where the fourth gen, I think that's the biggest improvement that Glock made in the fourth generation Glocks. The magazine release button. I think it's very well designed. I think it's very well done. It's much easier for people of almost any hand size to press that mag release button. And it's virtually impossible for you to press it accidentally. And, by the way, that's a big concern. That's something that with any pistol, you need to be aware of that. How easy is it for you to accidentally, based on your grip or during recoil while you're shooting your gun, how easy is it for you to accidentally press your magazine release button? Because if that mag comes out of the gun when you don't want it to, you've basically got a useless gun. You know, if you fire one or two shots and that mag comes out, you got a one or two shot pistol. That's it. So, very important. Very important. I've talked to people that have had issues with that. And there's several reasons why that happens if you accidentally eject a magazine when you're not wanting to. Oftentimes, by the way, it's the user of the gun. Not always, but oftentimes it's the user of the gun. You're doing something with your grip, and while you're shooting that gun, you're accidentally pressing the mag button. Sometimes it's the gun's fault. Sometimes you might have a spring that, you know, a magazine button spring or whatever it is that puts tension on that mag button. Sometimes that might be too weak. And so it's too easy to press and release that mag. Now, some people that have guns with a paddle release, that's a good case for that. H&K and certain Walther pistols have that paddle release under the trigger guard that's ambidextrous. So with either hand, whether you're a left-handed shooter or a right-handed shooter, it works very well. There is a positive about that feature. You have to kind of retrain yourself to reload. You have to, you know, train yourself to reload it a different way. But I got to say, there's a positive because, again, it's virtually impossible if you've got a paddle release, mag release lever under your trigger guard. Pretty much impossible for you to press that accidentally. You know, the Walther PPQ M2 is designed with the American-style mag release button, but a lot of people have used the PPQ version 1, which is the European style. It's got that paddle release, and a lot of people are big fans of that. So anyway, I'm testing out this G19. And, you know, for IDPA shooting and USPSA shooting, reloading is important. I really think that for everyday concealed carry, reloading is less important. I'm not saying not important, but less important. Because I think the chances are near zero that you're going to get to reload, especially if you're carrying a gun with any sort of decent capacity, the chances are near zero that you're going to get to reload in a fight. Although, considering what happened in Orlando a couple weeks ago, I guess maybe that might, in that situation, blow my theory out of the water. So, who knows? It's still pretty rare. Because, you know, think about it. Think about that Orlando situation. Like John Adine and I said last week, I hope you listened to the last episode and you listened to my interview with Dr. John Adine on Rush the Nut. Rush the Nut. I think you're going to like that if you haven't listened to that interview. You know, like we said, most of the times these cowards, and that's exactly what they are, they're cowards and they're full of evil, these people that do these mass shootings. If there's somebody that fires at them once or twice, that fires back, or if they rush the nut, if the whole crowd of people in the building where he's doing the shooting, as soon as you rush the nut, that situation is normally over. You know, how many times these mass shooters are either killed by the cops or they kill themselves as soon as they get any kind of resistance? That's the end of the horrific event. This is why I'm a big fan of carrying a gun with a decent amount of capacity, so that you got plenty of opportunities to stop the threat before having to try to reload, before having to try to take concealment or cover and reload your handgun. 9 rounds. I look for 9 rounds, 8 minimum, and preferably a double stack pistol when I can carry it, with anywhere from 11 to 18 rounds in it, or 19 rounds. Preferably, that's preferable. And most of the time, when I can, I am making the effort to put a Glock 19 on my hip. 16 rounds of 9mm. Of good quality 9mm concealed carry ammo. Lately I've been carrying Federal HST 124 grain plus P. The 147 grain is pretty good too. Federal HST is good stuff. Hornady Critical Duty is good. Corban DPX solid copper bullets 115 grain. All good stuff. Double tap. So I like to have that. And you know, folks, it's just so easy to conceal guns these days. Now, I'm actually sort of open carrying today. While I'm in my vehicle driving, it's pretty concealed. Driving to the match. But, you know, hey, I open carried on my property this morning. I'm going to be open carrying at the match. And when I finish up with the match, I'm probably going to be doing a little bit of open carrying because I've got to stop a couple places where I know that there are no 30-07 signs posted prohibiting open carry. And let's see what my mood is, whether I feel like untucking my shirt and concealing or not. I'm not a big fan of open carry, but I'm a big fan of the fact that we shouldn't be penalized if our gun accidentally shows while we're trying to conceal it. And so that's what I like about open carry, is that now we're no longer penalized like we used to be or could have been. I mean, you know, still, you have to be caught, and, you know, and a cop has to arrive on the scene and you know. But that's not an issue now. because it's not illegal to open carry anymore in the state of Texas, as it used to be for quite some time. So I expect a pretty packed IDPA match. The weather's supposed to be nice. You know, we've had a little over a week of dry weather now here in the San Antonio area after all the massive amounts of rain and flooding that we got during the spring. So I think the dry weather is going to bring a lot of people out to the range today. It's the day before Father's Day on Saturday. So I've done these matches before the day before a holiday, and people are packed. It's packed. So I anticipate quite a few shooters. But that makes it kind of fun, too. If some of you don't competition shoot, you know, I'm a big fan of competition shooting. There's some things I don't like about competition shooting, but there's more that I do like about competition shooting, which is why I do it. You can learn a lot from the other shooters are there, too. That's one of the things I like about it, is that you can learn a tremendous amount from the other shooters. You can watch what they're shooting. You can watch the gear that they're using. You can talk to them about ammo and ammo choices and ammo selection and things like that. And you can pick up some shooting techniques, all kinds of things. You can pick up reloading techniques and all kinds of good stuff by watching other shooters. So I just now got to the range. I just now got to the gate, and they haven't opened it up yet. It's going to be about 5 minutes. So that's about how much longer I'm going to talk to you on this segment here before we move into something else. You know, this week is a lot about listener emails. And I'm actually recording this before I address the listener emails and possibly voicemails that have come in. By the way, if you want to leave me a voicemail, the phone number is 210-646-1727. If you want to email me, I'm bob@handgunworld.com. If you want to send me a Facebook message, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. And I'm also handgunworld on Twitter, @HandgunWorld on Twitter. I've been using Twitter a little bit more lately. Twitter has never been a big thing for me. I've been more friendly, I guess, or more apt to use Facebook. But I see the value in Twitter. It's still, you know, believe it or not, I don't know, I got kind of a mental block. I have a harder time understanding Twitter than I do Facebook. Oh, well. Hey, social media is getting kind of irritating a little bit, but it is what it is. That's a way for you to communicate with me. Although, if you want direct communication with me, I much prefer you send me an email or send me a voicemail, and that would be great. Probably, I think we're going to have about 6 stages in this match, and I can tell by the line of cars that are already sitting here waiting to get in. This is going to be a packed match. Probably going to be shooting 6 stages. Texas Tactical does a real good job of putting on these matches. Mike Webb's the match director. If you ever want to find that information, if you're in South Texas, check it out, texastactical.net. Come shoot with us. I haven't been here often enough. This is a Saturday where I get a chance to do it. It's been pretty stressful for the last couple weeks for me at home, so I'm really looking forward to relieving some stress. And, you know, that's another benefit of these matches, is that there's so much good camaraderie. And it's just kind of a good stress relief. It's therapy, I guess. There's a lot of camaraderie. People that are in the shooting sports, they're friendly people. They're good people. A lot of them are salt-of-the-earth people. Really makes me mad when the anti-gunners try to make us out to be a bunch of evil thug nutbags, you know, or a bunch of crazy people. And that's their, you know, that's what the anti-gunners do, folks. That's how they try to make us out to be, and we're not. 95% of the people that own and shoot firearms are good people. They're good salt-of-the-earth people. And a lot of my brothers and sisters that listen to this, you know, some of you are people of faith like I am. And even those of you, if you're not a person of faith, they're just, you're just good people. You're generous. You're kind. You're thoughtful. You're responsible and patriotic. And that's who we are. We're good Americans. We believe in our Second Amendment right. And we don't believe that nut jobs and terrorists, like the guy in Orlando and like the guy at Sandy Hook, and he was a nut job. He was just a flat-out, wacko nut job. But the San Bernardino shooters and the Orlando shooters were terrorists. Those aren't the norm, folks. Those aren't the norm. And it's not the gun's fault that these people had enough evil in their hearts to do what they do. If you have that much evil in your heart and you want to do something like they did, you know what, folks? You're going to find a way to do it. You're going to find a way to do it. You know, these politicians that want to ban what they call assault rifles, which is not true. They're not assault rifles. AR-15s are just simply not assault rifles. People, I wish people would stop calling them that. That's just not what they are. But these people that want to ban it, you know, do you realize that an evil nut job could go into a nightclub, a school, with a 12-gauge shotgun and do just as much damage, especially if they get good at reloading that shotgun? They could go in with a lever-action rifle. They can fire 10 shots out of that lever-action pretty quickly, reload it pretty quickly, because you notice something about these mass shootings. They seem to have time to reload. You know, my son was showing me all of this garbage that he has on his Twitter feed, people that follow him, that I tell him to get rid of those people. You know, saying stupid stuff like AR-15s can fire 900 rounds a minute. What kind of ignorant people are these? You know, come on. So they can, these people can still do a lot of damage. A lot of damage. In the past, shooters have done a lot of damage with revolvers and shotguns. So give me a break. All right. Well, there are some of my thoughts. And before the match, I'm going to park. I'm going to get myself ready, get my gear in shape here, get signed up. And I'll be talking to you when the match is over. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Chaz from the Road Gunner Podcast, also known as the Unnamed Trucker. And you're listening to my good friend Bob Main on the Handgun World Podcast. Bob carries a gun because he can't carry a cop.
All right, headed home from the range. Just finished up shooting a real nice IDPA match. It was very hot because it's summertime here in San Antonio. But it was a lot of fun. Probably had over 60 shooters there. I figured it was going to be crowded. But good five-stage match. And I think I shot pretty well. I'll let you know. Watch my Facebook page, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. If my score was good, I'll put it up there. If it was embarrassing, I'm not. But I think I did pretty well. You know, I realized I hadn't shot a competition match in about 4 months. So I think I did pretty well, especially the first three out of five stages, for not having shot in 4 months. Really enjoying the third-gen G19. You know, one thing I like about third gens, and I think I'm going to go back to making a third gen my primary gun. It's much easier to adjust the spring weight, the recoil spring rate. Excuse me, recoil spring weight. I can change out springs on the third gen easier than the fourth gen. And I know that you can buy things that'll let you run a third gen spring and a fourth gen Glock. And, you know, for you guys that don't shoot Glocks, then none of this really matters. But if you do shoot Glocks, you probably know what I'm talking about. So I use a heavier spring. I shoot factory ammo. I think the factory spring is a 19 pound and I use a 21 pound. Or maybe it's a 20 pound. Yeah, it's a 20 pound. Wolf gun springs, I like them a lot. To me, it softens the recoil a little bit with the factory loads. Now, I don't shoot bunny fart reloads like some of these guys out there. You know, you can tell the gun barely recoils on them because they've got these rounds downloaded so far. In fact, I think there were some shooters that probably aren't even making power factor. It was a local match, and that stuff's not checked on. It's not policed at the local matches like it is at the regional, state, and national matches. I'm going to pause real quick, and I'll be right back. All right, I'm back. Now, one of the cool things I saw, a man was there shooting, and he brought his 9-year-old son, and his 9-year-old son shot. And it was great. The young man is very safe with the pistol. And he's very good. Congratulations. You know, this 9-year-old's been taught very well how to handle a gun, a pistol. So, you know, folks, I don't think it's too young. As long as you're teaching, whether you got a boy or a girl who's in that age range, if you teach them well, they're fine. Here's one of the things I was very impressed with. This little 9-year-old boy who is shooting with us, he shot the stages. He shot a Glock 17, a 9mm, a full-size service pistol, 9mm Glock 17. If you think Glocks don't fit your hand and that's why you can't shoot them well, then what do you have to say about this 9-year-old? The young man didn't have very big hands. The young man does not have adult-sized hands. And I don't even care if you're an adult that has small hands. This kid's hands were not as big as yours. And he did very well. He wasn't real fast, but he was accurate with that Glock 17. If he can shoot it, you can shoot it. So again, as I've talked about a lot the last several weeks, don't let handgun fit deter you from buying a gun that you really want, especially if it's got a lot of other benefits that you also like. And also, furthermore, it's really cool to see a father out there with his son doing these. In fact, it's good to see parents out with their kids taking advantage of the shooting sports and shooting as a recreation. You know, folks, that's what I meant when I said earlier in the previous segment. Probably 98% of people that own and shoot firearms on a regular basis are solid, salt of the earth, good people. And I sure hope that we don't let our government take this right away from us. And I'm talking about you listening to this podcast. You know who our greatest enemy is? I don't believe that ISIS is our greatest enemy. I don't believe Al-Qaeda is our greatest enemy. I don't believe in any political party or anybody that is our greatest enemy here, and I'm talking about in our earthly life. Our greatest enemy is apathy. Yeah, I'll say that again. Apathy is our greatest enemy. Too many people don't care. They don't care what happens about they don't care what happens with their gun rights or any other civil right that they have. They don't participate. They, you know, not everybody who is eligible to vote votes. As a matter of fact, we normally have probably 50% or even a little less than 50% of the registered voters who actually go and vote and take part in having their voice in government. They don't care. That is the problem. People are far too worried about their iPhones. And they're far too worried about whatever electronic gizmo they can get their hands on, or what their boyfriend or girlfriend said to them. Or, you know, folks, come on. Wake up. I think, at least for me, my priorities are God number one, family number two, and country number three. All right? And folks, I'm not ex-military or anything like that, but God, family, and country. A lot of people are not even putting country third. They're putting country 10th or 11th or 12th. And that's not the way our country was founded, folks. That's not what this was all about. Our country was founded on the concept of citizen governors. In other words, citizens that took place and became legislators, governors, senators, a citizen politician. And they became a politician, they served, and then they left. That was the way this country was designed. Citizens do their duty, become part of their government, or at least vote and get active in their government, and then after they've served a fair amount of time, leave and go back to doing what you were doing. If you were a farmer, go back to being a farmer. If you were a doctor, go back to that. If you were a mechanic, go back to that, or an engineer, or a lawyer, whoever you were. After you've spent some time in government, get out. That's the way the United States of America was founded, and that was the system that we were supposed to have. Folks, don't let this right get taken away from you. Don't let a father and a 9-year-old son lose their right to go to an IDPA match and enjoy some good time together. And, you know, what a great experience for this 9-year-old young man. So, that was one of the best things about the match I just shot. I did make one critical mistake. I shot a no-shoot, or I shot a non-threat target. Shot him in the right shoulder, but nonetheless, I shot a no-shoot target, so I got penalized. I don't think it's going to hurt my overall score too badly, because the rest of my shooting was pretty good. But nonetheless, I shot somebody that wasn't supposed to get shot. And that's one of the great challenges of either competition matches like this, or if you take a good training class, you learn to condition yourself to pay attention better as to who you're shooting and where you're shooting so that you don't shoot innocent people. So, and by the way, I did have one malfunction. I heard a click when I was expecting a bang. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was bad ammunition. I don't know if it was a light strike on the primer. I don't think it was. I don't know. In fact, maybe it was right after I reloaded the pistol. Right after I performed a reload. So I don't know. Maybe I did what I've done before. Well, I don't think so. I was going to say maybe I sent the slide forward before I fully inserted the magazine. But I don't think so, because I didn't use the slide release. I used the overhand tug method. So, which I've trained, and that's I put that into my head. I don't use the slide release. So, I don't know why I heard the click when I was expecting a bang. It is a loud sound, folks. It really is. But, you know, tap rack, roll to the right, run the slide. You know, or tap rack, roll to the right, get the round out of there, fresh round in, no problem. Maybe it cost myself 1 second. You get good at clearing malfunctions, shouldn't take you more than a second. But it can happen. Even with the Glock 19, I think I was shooting Winchester white box ammo. That might have had something to do with it. I don't know. I'm pretty sure, because I started off with half a box of Federal, shot that, and then I switched over to my Winchester white box. Had a 100-round pack of Winchester white box. So yeah, I'm about 95% sure that was the ammo I was shooting when I had the malfunction. I don't know. But you know, that just, it proves what I've said before. No matter what gun you shoot, if you shoot it enough, you're going to have malfunctions. I don't care if it's a Glock. I don't care if it's even a revolver. You're going to have malfunctions with a revolver. You might not have really good ammo sometimes, and you might get a click when you're expecting a bang with a revolver. Anything can malfunction. You better know what to do. I was in the middle of shooting when that happened. Real easy to get right back in the fight, and I did. So if you're not trained in how to do that, get some training. Even if you have to watch some videos on clearing malfunctions and practice it, buy some snap caps and practice it at home, dry practice. Practice it over and over and over and over again so that it's second nature, so that it's a reflexive response. Reflexive. In other words, you just do it by reflex. You don't have to think about it. You hear that click? Oh, I know what to do. Taprak rolled to the right, back in the fight. That's how reflexive that it should be. All right, overall, good match. Just a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat at 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got something out of it. Hope you got something out of the voicemail responses and the excellent voicemails that were called in by listeners. And hope you got something out of my little couple IDPA recaps. Next week, I'm going to get to some more emails. May have another interview. I'm working on lining something up. If I can get that done, you will hear another good interview with a real good guest. And I'm not going to spill the beans too much on it, because I want it to be a surprise, and I want you to look forward to it. Remember, my Amazon store is an easy way to support my show. You don't have to spend any extra money, but you do financially support me, and it just kind of helps reimburse me for the time and the effort that I put into this show. Whenever you make an Amazon purchase, if you just go to handgunworld.com, then click the Amazon store and follow that link. If you just do those few steps each time, you will be helping out my efforts on this podcast. And certainly, please become a member of the Shooters Club. Over 55 instructional videos and some really good audio podcasts that only members get to view and listen to for only $8 a month or $75 a year. Click the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. With all of this said, remember, read your Bible every day. Live your life every day as if it's the last day that you get to live. Have that philosophy. Have that mindset. Shoot straight. Shoot safe. And remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Well, some of them, anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.